Welcome to the AWS Podcast. This is your regular journey into all things Amazon Web Services, including service updates, technical tips, deep dives, and interviews. Please visit aws.amazon.com/podcast for previous episodes, RSS feeds, and to share your feedback. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the AWS Podcast, episode number 92. Fantastic to have you back with us again. A very special episode this week. We're going to be having a bit of a deep dive into the world of technical account management at Amazon Web Services. And joining me for this is one of my colleagues based out of Sydney, is Mark Napoli. Welcome to the podcast, Mark.
Hi, Simon. Glad to be here. Thank you.
Great to have you joining us. And I know you've been listening to the podcast for a little while. You've been saying I should come on and tell everyone what I do. So it's a great opportunity for us to learn a little bit more about it. But before I launch into a cavalcade of questions for Mark, I just want to set some context about what a technical account manager does or how they fit into the overall customer experience at AWS. And we will be doing a deeper dive into support in the future. But what's relevant for this particular episode is that there are four major levels of support. We have basic support, developer, business, and enterprise support. Enterprise support is our highest level of support, and it includes a number of capabilities, including things like white glove routing of cases, an under 15-minute response time for cases, and other benefits that are very important to enterprise customers. But one of those major differences or major facilities that you get with this type of support is access to your very own technical account manager 24/7. So I thought it would be interesting to actually meet one of these technical account managers, learn more about what they do for customers, how they work, etc. And thankfully, Mark has generously offered his time to do that with us today. So thank you for that, Mark. And what we'll do is really get a bit of a flavour of what happens in the life of a TAM. But before we do that, Mark, let's touch on what was your background before you joined AWS as a technical account manager?
Sure. So prior to working at AWS, I was a technical consultant at a large international telco that was based here in Sydney. So that really involved working with multinationals, essentially, that were based in Australia but had offices all over the world and needed, you know, quite complex network and data center solutions to serve their, you know, 5,000, 10,000 strong staff, very distributed workforces. So I was really fortunate in that role in that I got to see the entire gamut of pre-sales from, you know, the initial sales discussions through to discussions around the solution, then actually designing the technology that these companies would use, and then effectively flowing into project planning and implementation. So that was the last 5 years. And prior to that, it really sort of stretches back into sort of the mid-90s across a range of roles with network design, sort of security and Linux administration. And I actually started out as a system administrator at an ISP back in the 90s. So a really varied role, varied range of roles, Simon.
There you go. So obviously an interesting mix of different technologies in there. So clearly a very strong network familiarity. You mentioned a bit about systems administration, etc. I'm guessing that a TAM needs to have a kind of a Swiss Army knife of technical capabilities at their disposal.
Yeah, look, typically TAMs are usually strong in one or two areas. So, you know, we might be very strong at Linux and networking or Windows and database. But effectively, you need to have a good knowledge across the board. And as you know, at AWS, we have a lot of products and we keep coming out with new products in all areas. So it's an essential skill to be able to pick up new technologies quickly.
So how did you come to decide to join AWS as a TAM?
Well, funnily enough, I was reading the TAM job description and I sort of felt it was an ideal summary of everything that I'd done to date. So a TAM really needs to be, I think, many things to many people. I find that one day I might be helping a customer understand their, you know, their S3 bucket ACLs, and then the next day I'm in a business review talking about service management opportunities within a company. And so it's a really varied mix. And to do it properly, I think you need to take a step back sometimes and just look at when it's not just a technology problem, but it's a people problem, and you need to solve it in a different way. So I think really the reason I became a TAM is because AWS allows us to be, it gives us a lot of freedom to be to help customers in the way that we know how. And that comes down to customer obsession, which is a leadership principle I'm sure you know all about, Simon.
Certainly, it's a key part of the overall Amazon mission is to be the most customer-obsessed company on Earth. So the TAM role, amongst many others, is a small step towards that, no doubt. And what's your favourite part of the role, Mark? What do you enjoy doing most?
So my favourite part about the TAM role specifically is most likely the challenge of continued learning. So I sort of got a sense early on in my career, and probably others did the same, that you either go really deep into one subject or you go wide across many subjects. And so finding that right balance for me is really the key to staying engaged and interested in my work. But probably more important than what I like about the role, Simon, is what I like and enjoy about working at AWS, and those are the leadership principles. So, you know, they're really simple, powerful messages that I think dictate the way that we behave with each other, our colleagues, and the way that we deal with our customers. So it's pretty refreshing. It's a pretty refreshing way to work, I think.
Yeah, definitely. It certainly does provide quite a collaborative and collegiate experience. If you're interested in those leadership principles, they are up on the Amazon website. If you Google Amazon leadership principles, it'll pop up there. I think they'll make for interesting reading, and certainly we do live them day in and day out, that's for sure. So let me ask you a tougher one, Mark. I've given you some softball questions so far. Can you tell me what is the hardest problem you've had to solve so far as a TAM at AWS?
Well, fortunately, I've got a vast army of support engineers that can help me solve problems. But probably one of the most challenging positions I was put in was sort of late last year when we had an issue in the Sydney region. I don't know if you recall, one of the availability zones had an issue with EBS volumes, so they had become stuck. And so they didn't actually disappear, and no data was lost on the volumes, but the instances that they were attached to continued to run. And so from an OS perspective, it just looked like there was 100% IO wait. And so as you can imagine, you know, customers started to complain, applications were doing funny things. So look, we handled that situation, but the follow-up from that was that one customer in particular wanted to find out a way of how to take a server or emulate a server sort of going offline. And of course, in the cloud world, you can't just go up to a server and press a button to turn the instance off. But in the end, we did this with sort of a combination of a little application that monitored disk activity and actually wrote a file to disk of random string and then read that random string back to make sure that the EBS volume was there and healthy. And then if it wasn't, we had a system of implementing modifications to security groups to cut any TCP connection to that instance. So it was a fairly sort of simple solution in the end, but what made it fairly difficult to deal with was the whole stack of test cases that we needed to go through. So we wanted to test this in different regions. We wanted to test this on the different OSs that we have, the different instance sizes to see if there was a difference in the way that they respond to this. So it was just something that took a lot of attention and a lot of time, and I guess a lot of tenacity on my half to make sure that we tested this properly through to conclusion. So that's just one of the stories out of a day of the life of a TAM.
Yeah, certainly interesting, and it does give you the opportunity to dive deep into these problems where you're working through them for the specific use case of the end user. You know, these are things that are not necessarily relevant for all use cases or all customers, but for the particular one in that case, it was a suitable solution for their requirements. So I guess you were helping them make sure that it would work in all foreseeable scenarios, which is important.
Spot on.
Now, what's an interesting AWS thing that you've learnt in your travels? Because you've been a TAM for a while now, haven't you? How long have you been TAMing for at AWS?
I started in January last year, so a very quick 18 months. And okay, look, there's been lots of interesting things, but you know, you always tend to remember the thing that you've just learned. And just in the last week or two, I've been playing with spot instances. Well, I'm actually finding that a number of my customers have taken an interest in spot, and that's, you know, that's typical. People tend to knock over on demand and then lock in their reserved instance pricing and get comfortable with that, and then they find the opportunities to use spot within their application. So. So two things I've learned in the last sort of week or two, and when you bid on a spot instance, you select a number of features or parameters. So you select the availability zone that you want that spot to run in, or you can leave that as no preference, and you of course put down the bid price. So what I've learnt is that you can't actually specify a spot request price, a bid price that's four times the current spot price. So we brought that in November, and that pretty much stops what you can see, or what we used to see, where you know customers would outbid each other and drive the price way up into the tens and twenties of dollars of instance per hour cost. So that came in last November, and then the other thing that I learned is that if you don't specify an availability zone when you put your spot request in, you don't actually get pushed into the availability zone that has the lowest spot price. So I actually got questioned on this last week, because perhaps you would think that would be the way that our logic runs. But in fact, the logic behind where your spot goes is fairly complex. And so my advice to customers, rather than trying to reverse engineer the logic, is to make absolutely sure that your application, and when you architect your application for spot, that it time checks as frequently as possible. So it's calling home, and that if there are any terminated instances with jobs on them, that those jobs get queued to run again. So we talk about designing for failure, and spot instances is a fantastic example of that. But that's just a little interesting thing that I learned in the last 2 weeks.
Some handy insight there, and certainly if our listeners have not looked into spot instances, for certain use cases, they are both very efficient from a processing perspective, because you can get more compute for your dollar, and also very good from a cost perspective. We have customers who have saved up to 90% of their cost just by switching to spot. So certainly something to look into. Now, Mark, how and why should customers use their TAM?
I think there's a paradigm that I learnt a long time ago that I quite like when you're thinking about how to run applications, not only on-prem, but within the cloud or on any infrastructure, really. And that is you tend to design, you build, you run, and then you optimize. And so I tell my customers to get me involved at all of those stages. So when you're designing the applications that you're going to be running on AWS, give us a heads up on your plans. We have an insight into 30-plus different product teams that are often working independently. And if anyone can avoid repetition at this stage, it's going to be us. Okay, so we can get us involved early in what you're doing and let us know. When you're building your applications, you're going to come up against roadblocks. You're going to find that IAM policies don't actually behave in the way that you expected them to or something like that. So get the TAM involved here, because we can help you find the documentation, help you find a workaround, or help you find the person that will give you the solution. And then when you're running your applications and things tend to be going fairly smoothly, we act very much like a service manager would in other companies. So, we provide monthly reports, for example. Sometimes we work on your cases directly, and other times we just handle the escalations that you raise. So if you think about the support engineers that we have at AWS, and there's hundreds of them globally, they get through an amazing sort of diversity of cases and a large number of cases, but they don't really know you and your business and your priorities and your sensitivities. So raise your cases and provide the information that's required to solve the problem, but get your TAM engaged early so that AWS support can work the best for you. And then finally, in the optimized stage, get us involved in your service meetings. Help us. We can help you, with your planning on projects, spotting issues that you may not know about with capacity or service limits, and then potentially even providing training to make sure that your staff are up to date with all of the AWS services. So we really help across the whole life cycle, Simon.
Yeah, it is a broad job, that's for sure. And one of the capabilities, or the tasks that I've seen some of the TAMs do for customers is quite an unusual one in the IT realm, and that's often in those service management meetings or review meetings, they'll actually be proactively recommending how to spend less money on the environment. So that I know that analysis is often refreshing and welcomed, because customers love to spend less to get the same outcome. So I know one of the things that most TAMs are quite au fait with is the various combinations of reserved instances and spot instances and capacity type planning things that go into that. So a fair bit of work on the spreadsheet there, I'd say, Mark.
Yeah, that's right. And not just spreadsheets, but you know, there are other tools that that we can use, as well as doing a sort of custom analysis on your reserved instance usage and making recommendations on how you should be modifying your reserved instances, for example, to you know, soak up all of that reserve instance capacity. So you're right. We do have an active interest in driving your cost down.
Fantastic. Now, one of the other things that you get with enterprise support is infrastructure event management, or IEM. And this is a really interesting capability that was spoken about a while back in the podcast. So I thought it would be worth revisiting this. And I guess from a TAMS perspective, if you can explain to us what it is and your role in that process.
Sure. So I think the TAM is really key or central to an infrastructure event management process. We effectively, or you identify an event that that is coming up that has, you know, a lot of focus, either media focus, or it's a new software launch, or you're potentially going into a new region for the first time. And once you engage us for an IEM, we start off with a runbook. So the preparation runbook effectively allows us together to fill in all of the information that is necessary for us to help you run the event smoothly. So we start off with an architecture review session, and we look at security, we look at performance and resilience aspects of your design to make sure that you're architecting it right on AWS, and that's where a solution architect gets involved. And then with the TAM, we look at pre-event performance testing. So where you can, you know, running through case scenarios of what the load might look like, and actually attempting to put a full production load onto the system before the event actually starts. So what we're trying to avoid, Simon, is someone getting into the middle of an event and discovering that you know, they're out of EBS volume space on a particular service limit in a region, which could then affect their ability to start up EC2 instances. We don't want that to happen. So we want to get engaged early and help you through that. And so during the event, on top of all of the pre sort of preparation work, we have the TAM and a named support engineer that sits in a war room at AWS or on a customer premises if you've already got one set up. And so typically we're reporting on the AWS infrastructure components throughout the event and tracking load as it increases and that sort of thing. So if you think about what enterprise support as an offering gives you, and you mentioned this before, it's a 15-minute response time on your cases. An IAM is effectively a way to drop that down to zero. You don't need to raise a case. You have the named support engineer that's prepared, read over your documentation, ready to respond to any issue that you have. So it's absolutely essential for anyone that's considering a large-scale launch or event on AWS.
Absolutely. And it's interesting when you think about those launches. I've got quite a few customers who have enterprise support and who use IEMs, and not all of them use it for publicly facing launches, although for many of them that is an important thing. So maybe a marketing campaign or significant event that they're running that has a publicly facing element. A lot of my enterprise customers will use it for migration. So when they're migrating from an existing system, perhaps an on-premise system that's out of lease or what have you, onto AWS, the IAM is the migration process. So it's kind of a different view of the same requirements, which is that old adage of preparation prevents poor performance. That's what we want to do. We want to prepare. We want everyone on the same page. We want everyone lockstep together, including all the third parties that might be involved to make this happen. The nice thing about enterprise support is you can have as many of these IEMs as you like. So if you're doing regular migrations or different events, it can happen as well. And I know that some of my customers are already gearing up for the Soccer World Cup this year, and IEM is a big part of that for them, because there are certain points in time that there'll be a lot of traffic for particular application types, and having that support is important. So IEM certainly an interesting capability. How many IEMs have you done so far, Mark, if I can ask you that one?
I've done over 10 IEMs, Simon, for both customers here in Australia and overseas, and they've ranged from online auctions to sporting events, which, as you mentioned, are quite sensitive times, especially with the amount of streaming that goes on. And then you're right, some internal launches. So launches that, you know, effectively on the night really are just a DNS change. You know, you might be just changing a DNS from one IP address to another, and you know, so there's not a lot of fanfare, but it needs to go right because, you know, sometimes you're doing these things overnight, and then in the morning you're going to be expecting a lot of customers are going to be hitting a new site for the first time, and they may find problems. So you want to find them before they do.
Exactly. Now, before we wrap up, one of the things we try and do on this podcast as much as we can is share our black belt tips. Now, as a TAM who's in the trenches each and every day dealing with interesting problems and opportunities, what is a black belt tip you want to share with our listeners today, Mark?
Actually, it's funnily enough, you mentioned something before about understanding cost, and that's a topic that's close to my heart because it... I think this is a way that TAMs can deliver value, but I also believe that not enough customers are really scrutinizing the way that they spend on AWS. So we provide programmatic billing, and one of those programmatic bills is called the detailed billing with resources and tags file. So when you set up programmatic billing, you can set it up to drop a file into an S3 bucket of your choice. Now it's a pretty large file, especially if you're using a lot of AWS across regions and across accounts in a consolidated billing structure. So it's often too big to open with Excel, and so a lot of people just stop there and sort of say, well, I'll get to that one day. But there are a number of packages that you can use and little methods that you can use to actually get a really good visualization of your AWS spend. And one of those is the Netflix Ice package. So this is an open source package that Netflix released probably about a year ago. And so what it does is it takes your very large file with, 5 million, 10 million, 20 million lines, and it cracks it up and then displays it as a using JavaScript, using the HighCharts package, actually. And it gives you a very pretty breakdown of your regions, of your accounts, of the products that you're using, and the operations that those products are applying. And, countless times I've suggested this to customers, and they've loaded it up and then realized that they've had resources running in the Dublin region that they didn't actually remember starting, and so they can go there and shut those instances down or do whatever they need to do. So that's one way of visualizing spend. And the other way, which I've set up recently for a customer, is to use a data pipeline job. I think you spoke about data pipeline a few episodes back, Simon, but it's a great service that allows you to move data around within AWS. And so you can set it up to actually take your billing file and drop it into a Redshift database. And then from there you can point your standard BI tools to it and run all of your own reports. So, I really encourage customers to use the billing data almost as a visualization and even a troubleshooting tool sometimes to really get an understanding of their spend on AWS. So they're my black belt tips for this week, Simon.
Fantastic. Great tips that people can try it for themselves and use and see if they get some success. So that wraps up our bit of a deep dive into the world of the TAM. So thank you, Mark, for joining us. We really do appreciate your time.
You're welcome. Thank you, Simon.
And thank you, everyone, for listening. Again, if you have feedback or comments, please share them. AWSpodcast@aws.com or on Twitter @AWSpodcast. We do love to get your feedback. So thanks again for joining us and see you next time. Bye-bye. Thanks again for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with others. We love getting your feedback. So please contact us on Twitter @AWSpodcast or via email awspodcast@amazon.com. Theme music provided under Creative Commons by Miles Rogers, audiofarm.org/audiophiles/22275.